This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Deborah Becker.
European Union leaders held emergency talks today about how to share responsibility for the thousands of refugees streaming into Europe. The United States' role in the crisis is under debate, but officials in states like Massachusetts are offering to help.
Mayor Marty Walsh said if there is an overflow of refugees from Syria, he would be willing to have a conversation about how Boston could make room for refugees. Governor Baker also spoke about the issue to reporters last week.
It would be a step back for the United States not to be part of a solution to a problem like this. I mean, this is a global crisis, and it's one of those moments when I think it's important for the U.S. to be part of the solution.
And this is not the first time a Massachusetts governor has offered to help refugees. Here's former Governor Deval Patrick in a speech last July when the president asked states to take in children who had illegally crossed the Mexican border.
Every major faith tradition on the planet charges its followers to treat others as we ourselves wish to be treated. I don't know what good there is in faith if we can't and won't turn to it in moments of human need.
Joining us now to talk about this is Sasha Chanoff, co-founder and executive director of Refuge Point, a refugee advocacy organization in Cambridge. Sasha, thanks for being with us.
Thanks. Great to be back.
Also with us on the line is Paul O'Brien, vice president for policy and campaigns at Oxfam America. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. Paul, great to have you. Oh, Paul is not with us, apparently. Listeners, we want to hear from you as well. What role should Massachusetts or the U.S. have in the Europe refugee situation? Should we accept more refugees? Is it the right thing to do? Or do you think the U.S. should not get involved or cannot afford to get involved? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter at Radio Boston. So, Sasha, tell me your thoughts about Governor Baker and Boston Mayor Walsh suggesting that Massachusetts might help in this situation, in the refugee crisis in Europe. You've worked in refugee resettlement in the U.S. and in Massachusetts. So how do you interpret these statements?
Boston has a tradition of welcoming refugees and immigrants here. In fact, we are known as a welcoming city. The mayor's office, there is in the mayor's office an office of new Bostonians to create a more welcoming environment for refugees here. We have seen that they are people who, once they reestablish themselves, go on to contribute economically, go on to contribute in terms of cultural diversity. We have a history of doing this. We need to continue keeping that history going and expanding it.
So what does that history mean in terms of what are some of the strengths that we might offer to people, and what are some of our weaknesses, if you could be frank about it?
Sure. Well, the strengths in terms of refugees resettling here, we see that they do contribute to economic growth. If you step back and look nationally, you see that recent research in Cleveland, Ohio, has highlighted refugee contributions to regenerating depressed areas of that city. You see the same thing in terms of St. Louis, Missouri, with Bosnians. You see the same thing in Lewiston, Maine, with Somalis. We've seen that in the Merrimack Valley here in Massachusetts, that refugees do contribute with their strengths. They need support when they arrive. These are people, as we've seen in the media, whose lives have been torn apart by war and conflict. They are scared. They don't know if they will see family members again. We need to support them as they arrive, and we need to give them an opportunity.
So when you say that refugees have contributed economically to a community, do you factor in or subtract the costs of helping people establish their lives here when they've been displaced?
Yeah, what we've seen historically is that people need support to reestablish themselves. And often Americans themselves, individual citizens, get involved to support them, and they do receive support from our local governments as well. We then see that they go on to become contributing tax members. They go on to become U.S. citizens. Our refugee resettlement program in the U.S. gives a pathway to all refugees to become citizens after 5 years. Mm-hmm. So we see that they are economic contributors.
Now, of course, your view on this is not what everyone thinks. And not all that long ago, we heard some real criticism of Governor Patrick's plan to perhaps house some immigrant children at the Joint Base on Cape Cod and Bourne or at Westover Air Base. This is a member of the Bourne Board of Selectmen. This is Linda Zern talking about the plan from Governor Patrick to help house about 1,000 refugee children by providing temporary shelter at the Joint Base on Cape Cod. Let's listen.
We also don't know if these kids have diseases, that they're going to be spreading these diseases within our town. As a selectman, I think my first priority, making sure that the people in my town are safe.
So do you think that if Massachusetts got involved in a plan to help house some of the refugees that are now streaming across the borders in Europe, that we might get a similar reaction from folks in Massachusetts?
There are always reactions like that when people don't have enough information. Let me just try to clarify a little of how refugees actually come here. They go through the most extensive security checks out of anybody who's trying to get into the U.S. under any visa. That's number one. Number two, they go through extensive medical exams before they come here. And if they're found to have any kind of issues, some people, for example, that I've worked with in Africa have TB, then that is addressed before they come here, and they're not allowed to come here before that's addressed. So they go through medical exams, security background checks, cultural orientation classes, and a lot of different efforts that our government and our tax dollars go to providing to make sure that they come and have an opportunity and can integrate. Most people don't know that. Most people are afraid because there's a lack of information.
Okay, so, but in terms of this, so what you're saying is this reaction that we heard last year, that may have been a reaction because of a lack of information.
I think it is a lack of information. I think it's worth looking historically at this issue, too, here in the U.S. We have a history of welcoming immigrants and refugees that is next to none in the world. During World War II, about 250,000 refugees came here, mostly because of private citizens and faith-based efforts. Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, International Rescue Committee, Church World Service were organizations that helped lead the way through private citizen and faith-based efforts to enable refugees to come here. Just after World War II, 400,000 additional refugees came here. Then, in the preceding decades, people from communist countries, Hungary and other places, came here to resettle, Cuba as well. And if you look at 1980, when the U.S. institutionalized the Refugee Resettlement Act, we brought in 207,000 Vietnamese refugees in 1 year, doubling the numbers from the previous year. With the look of history, 35 years later, we see that those Vietnamese have integrated. They're American citizens. They are at our top colleges. They contribute to society in numerous and uncountable ways. We will see the same thing when these new people arrive here.
Okay. It's my understanding that Paul O'Brien, the Vice President for Policy and Campaigns at Oxfam America, is now on the line with us from Washington, D.C. Paul, hello. Thanks for being with us.
For being tardy, but I agree with everything that the last speaker just said. It's great to join this conversation.
Okay, so we know that President Obama last week said the U.S. would take in about 10,000 Syrian refugees in the coming year. The numbers are staggering, about 14 million people displaced. So you think that the U.S. should take a greater role in this situation in accepting more of these folks?
Yes, very much so. And just building off what's been said, it's been our history to do so. Historically, we've taken about half of the resettled refugees, those who've gone to camps, who've applied for resettlement to a third country. If we were to keep up with our previous average, we'd take about 70,000. Right now, we're offering to take about 10. That's nowhere near enough to relieve the pressure that's on the region.
So what is a reasonable number? Do you have one?
Yeah, we think our analysis was if you could take 5% of the refugees through these resettlement programs, and every country did its fair share, the U.S. would take around 70,000. So by both analysis, either if we took our fair share per capita, or if we just took what we've traditionally taken, half of the UNHCR's resettlement refugees, we'd be around 70,000. That's a number that could very easily be absorbed by American towns and cities, and I'm sure that Massachusetts would want to do its part too. Just to put that a little bit in perspective, the Pope, in one of his calls in recent times, asked every Catholic parish everywhere to take one family. For the United States, we could easily absorb the number I've just mentioned if Catholic parishes all around the country did that.
Yeah, the White House said last week that it's provided $4 billion. It pointed to that. It's provided $4 billion to relief agencies and said that this is an effective way for the U.S. to help. So there is a lot of money from the U.S. that seems to be going toward that effort. How would you say that the U.S. should balance that?
So first, we don't see this as either or. If we've got to put this in a little bit of context here, because we're facing the worst refugee crisis globally since the Second World War. 51 million refugees in the world right now, and Syria is the epicenter of it. So there's 4 million registered Syrian refugees, others who are unregistered. You've got huge numbers that are displaced within the country as well, adding to that the numbers you're talking about. The amount of money that the U.S. is contributing, it is generous as a government, but collectively with all the other donors, it's nowhere near enough to meet needs in country. I mean, the thing you have to do really is just ask yourself, why would a parent or the heads of a family, if they were getting humanitarian services that were appropriate to their needs in a place like Jordan or Lebanon, choose to lock their children in a container run by smugglers or put them on a flimsy boat where they have more than a slight chance of never making the trip, 2,500 people lost already, if we were meeting humanitarian needs in the region? We're obviously nowhere close to meeting their needs, which is why they are literally putting their families' lives at risk. So, yes, the U.S. is doing something on the ground. It's not enough in terms of being part of our collective effort. But if people are going to choose to leave, then we have to do our part in relieving pressure in the region by taking in migrants as well. And we do it through, as the previous speaker spoke, one of the more highly screened methods of doing so, that the people who come here we know are going to be ready to start up good lives here.
Okay. I want to just hear from some of our listeners. Our phone lines are lighting up here. Listeners, again, if you have a comment or you'd like to talk with either of our guests today, you can call us at 800-423-TALK. That's 800-423-8255. Claude is calling from Worcester. Claude, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What would you like to say?
Two points. I remember myself, I mean, we went as refugees in Italy in 1991 from Albania, and believe it or not, there were 70,000 people in a week. And the Italians in those days, they welcomed us. Now, United States is a big, big country. And I believe we do have the resources and the land and everything else, the infrastructure, to take in not 10,000, but 100,000, 200,000.
You think the United States could take tens of thousands of refugees and accommodate them?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and accommodate them, because these people, they're not leaving because they want to leave. No one wants to leave home. No one wants to leave their own country, but they are forced to because of war and atrocity. Point number one. And point number two, I think U.S. has a moral issue, since we were the one that set Arab Spring, Arab democracy. We stirred the pot there. I mean, look what's happening over there. Syria, it's a total chaos. Iraq, Egypt, Tunisia. We had to go there and, you know, create our own mini-war. They didn't ask for it. There were no wars in Syria prior to the Arab Spring.
All right.
Arab, you know, democracy.
Claude, thanks very much. Thanks very much for your call. I have to make some room for other callers here. Bob is calling from Quincy. Bob, you're on the air.
My concern is who's bearing the burden of housing all these refugees? I mean, when they were discussing it down in the Cape, that was one of the major concerns, is the bill of housing them, feeding them. I mean, we're all refugees. We're all from other countries. Nobody's really here that's 100% American, other than the Native Americans. But you know, when it comes down to brass tacks, I don't want to be footing the bill for anybody other than my fellow citizens here in the country. and I should have with a group of folks, and we have this discussion. I mean, if this was put to a vote, I would bet that it would be put down. I mean, we can't even afford to fix our bridges. We have all our own problems with health care. We have citizens that don't have health insurance. Why not take the billions of dollars and put it into our own citizens here of the United States? Thank you for taking the phone call.
Okay, Bob, thanks very much. Paul O'Brien, I'm going to ask you some of the questions that Bob asked here. I mean, what can the U.S. afford this, and should it be put to a vote?
Well, can I speak to both? Because I thought they were both good comments,
sure.
And I will talk to that. So I really do think it needs to be put in context, this number that we're talking about. One in four people in Lebanon now is a Syrian. Just think about that. If we were to do the same thing in the United States, we could take the entire population of Syria three times over, every Syrian. 80 million people. Sweden is taking 80,000. Ireland is taking 5,000. Germany, as we all know, is taking somewhere in the range of 800,000 to 900,000. And the folks that are being taken in Europe are folks that have not been vetted, not been screened, not put through security procedures. So we are taking people who've had the wherewithal to make it to a refugee camp, get screened as a refugee, and then begin the application to move to third country status. You're right. Bob's question, the second question, does this come for free? Does the United States make an offer of generosity with no costs? No, it doesn't. Mm. And we have already made a contribution to help people in the region, keeping them there, which in these kinds of circumstances is often what you want to do first, right? We want to return to a period of normalcy where people can go back to Syria at some point. It's not ideal that people leave their own homeland permanently. But in a situation like this, which is clearly bursting at the seams and people are taking such desperate measures to save the lives of their families, then the question comes, does the United States and do individual states like Massachusetts have a moral and ultimately economic obligation to do more? And we think we do. It is going to cost some money to house some of these families. But in terms of what it's going to cost us in for taxpayer dollars, it's going to be fractions of cents for every individual for the United States to step up here. It's not going to be a major impact on either the Massachusetts economy or the U.S. economy, the kinds of numbers, not just the kinds of numbers we're taking right now, but the kinds of numbers that organizations like Oxfam and others are proposing. It is a fraction of what the U.S. could do.
But, you know, there also may be concerns aside from cost, a couple of things. First of all, timing, the topic of immigration in the U.S. right now. We know that Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump seems to have hit a nerve with his anti-immigrant comments. And some of that sentiment, obviously, could be similar when you're talking about refugees. So it's a tough—immigration itself is a touchy issue right now. But also, we're talking about many of these refugees coming from the Middle East and the association with terrorism. So could that be—could both of those things be huge hurdles here if you're trying to get more of a commitment from the United States?
Well, they're hurdles, but they're also what makes this country so important in the world. I'm a migrant myself. The reason that people want to come to the United States is that there is public and peaceful debate over questions of identity and morality. I've been in touch with so many Americans who are frustrated that we're not doing more, that want to share the welcoming spirit of what it means to be American. So there's a debate going on right now about what it means to be an American, what migration will do for our economy, whether it's a blessing because it brings energy, better ideas, and hardworking people and creativity, or whether it's a burden. That's a debate that should be had, but we're not close to having a balanced debate when it comes to bringing people out of the very conflicts that we have played a role in. And I'm not saying we started them, but we are a significant force in determining whether we're going to see long-term peace in that entire region. And so the United States needs to show up in the region to resolve problems there, but it also has a very powerful role to play in addressing the symptom of the problem as people look desperately for another place to live.
Sasha Chanoff, I'd like you to weigh in here.
Yeah, conservatives also have a history of engaging here. The sanctuary movement in the U.S. started up in the early 80s among faith-based communities on the Texas border receiving refugees from Central America. And what they said is, we are very conservative people politically, but when we came face-to-face with these refugees coming up here, we could not turn our backs. So I appreciated Governor Duvall's comments around this earlier. I think there's also a context issue to put in place here. These people are not just fleeing their countries and trying to get into Europe. There is some context here. The context is that we are facing more displacement than at any time since World War II, and the average amount of time someone is a refugee is nearing 20 years. And the humanitarian system is broke and broken. It doesn't have enough money to give people the support they need to stay where they are, as Paul referred to. And the focus is simply not on giving people opportunity. Refugees face a double exclusion in the world, first from their homes because of war and exile, but then from the countries to which they fled by policies that don't allow them to integrate economically. So we have to look globally at how to change this.
Okay. I want to take another call here because we've got the phone lines completely lit up. Irfan is calling from Sharon. Irfan, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is, on the accounts that I have read so far through BBC and other European organizations, that 80% of refugees are Muslim, or they call themselves Muslim. Mm-hmm. So how many Muslim organizations are actually involved in refugee crisis in the United States? So in the perspective is, when they land here, they definitely need the religious social structure support. So is the government involving the Muslim organizations around Massachusetts or all over the United States? Do we have means to mobilize them?
We certainly heard Paul talk about perhaps Catholic parishes getting involved here and helping out. But I think you also bring up an interesting point, Irfan, that I'd like both of our guests to weigh in on in the short period of time that we have left here. And that is, what else do we do besides just accepting people? There has to be more in terms of just certainly resettling is the immediate need. But doesn't there have to be some political movement to try to help stabilize these areas? Sasha, you first.
No, certainly. There has to be political movement, but in addition, we have to look at ways that refugees can integrate into the countries to which they fled. We have to understand, UNHCR's Deputy High Commissioner Alex Alenikoff recently said, I'm going to propose a Newtonian fourth law of physics, that people who flee their homes are going to stay fleeing. They're not going back home. That's the new reality today. So what we have to do in refugee-hosting countries is to find ways that they can integrate economically, that they can integrate into lives of the host countries there in whatever way is possible. That will help to stem the tide of people putting their lives at risk to get into other countries.
Okay, Paul O'Brien, you've got about a minute to respond to that.
Yeah, well, I agree with everything that's been said, but I think your question is really important. We've got to do more than address just the symptoms. As my colleague said, the system is broken. I suggest your listeners go look for Turning the Humanitarian System on Its Head, a report that Oxfam just released on the huge gap between the ability of the system to respond and the levels of need. But the U.S., because of its power in the world, needs to do more to bring peace to the region. It needs to focus on diplomatic efforts. Putting more guns into that region at this point is not going to solve the problem. We've got to find a solution at source and then help the people who are suffering as a consequence.
Okay, Paul O'Brien, Vice President for Policy and Campaigns at Oxfam America, and Sasha Chanoff, Co-Founder and Executive Director of Refuge Point. Great to have both of you with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks very much.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.